No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-628-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. Tonight we have a guest, one of our favorite guests, Anise Jenkins, who's head of Stand Up for Democracy. And here in D.C., one of the oldest groups working on statehood in the district. Anise is a graduate at Howard University and has a MBA, and she's the director of Stand Up. And they just had their 20th anniversary. So welcome, Anise. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
You know what I read in your bio? That you remember Phi Beta Kappa. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I always knew you were really smart, but Phi Beta Kappa, wow. So you had your 20th anniversary, and it was really a nice get-together. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, well, we were celebrating 20 years. We were founded in 1997 when the control board took over all the powers of our local government except for parks, recreation, and libraries. So I just thought this is something, it's historic. I feel that we're participating in a historic civil rights movement, and we need to note things like that. So, some of the current members decided to get together and say, let's throw a bash and let's throw a fundraiser to see if we can get some of our original founders to come back to D.C. or come to D.C. and to honor those people who helped to start the organization.
So, Anise, this is Maria. I wanted to ask, you don't do this annually, have a fundraiser on your anniversary?
This is shocking. The last fundraiser we had was our 10th anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. Wow,
goodness. That's the last one we had. And who came to our fundraiser was Hilda Mason just before she passed away. She was one of the original founders of the Statehood Party, along with Julius Hobson. But she was one of our special guests, and that was 10 years ago. So that's something that we really have to pick up on is fundraising. That's extremely important. And we've learned over this 20 years that we need money. We do need money.
Let me just clarify a couple of things for people that might be listening. First of all, when Anise talks about the control board, in case you don't know, there was a board that actually came into the District of Columbia and took over in what I guess you would call martial law. They just took over. I mean, this has only been done a couple of times in American history. But they took over and actually ran everything in the city, even though we had an elected mayor and a city council. They just took over, which is what Congress has the right to do in the District of Columbia. And also, let me tell you that Hilda Mason and Julius Hobson were two just amazing people. They were amazing people. Hilda used a lot of her own personal fortune to support things in the District of Columbia, started a law school at UDC with her husband. She was just an amazing person. I was lucky enough to be there at the 10th anniversary with her, and she was one of my favorite people. And Julius Hobson was, again, somebody that was just I don't think we have anybody on the city council today that could fill Julius Hobson's shoes, unfortunately. He was very powerful and stood up for the people of District of Columbia and their rights. So, you know, Google those guys if you don't know who they are. Yeah. They're really amazing people.
Did something happen, or was there a accumulation of events that caused the control board to step in?
Well, supposedly they said that D.C. was bankrupt or going bankrupt. And this was in 1995 when the Congress actually established Senator Lars Faircloth from North Carolina wrote the legislation for the control board, and this was under President Bill Clinton that it was passed. This was under a Democratic president. So this was in 1995. But it did not take over as much power of the local democratically elected D.C. government until 1997, when D.C. Voters decided they were going to re-elect for the fourth time Marion Barry. A lot of people call this control board the Barry control board. But a lot of people knew that Marion Barry was a target of the Congress, and the Congress was not going to let Marion Barry run D.C. as an empowered mayor. They decided that they didn't like it and they could do something about it because they had the power and the authority to do whatever they wanted to the District of Columbia.
And you should realize, as far as Marion Barry goes, the federal government came after him for years. I mean, they came after him for years. They tried to get him on all sorts of corruption things. Which actually never worked until finally they did get him. They got him, of course, on the famous case where he was in the hotel room smoking crack. But they tried all sorts of, they thought he was stealing money and they couldn't prove that. And they thought there was all sorts of corruption and they couldn't prove that. So they really had it out. They really had it out for Mayor Barry for a long time. And I think Anise is right. It's finally culminated in them just taking over the city. They decided they wanted to do it. To this day, I think it's amazing that they were able to do that. Let me ask you, Niece, how has the movement changed, in your opinion, over the last 20 years? You know, all movements ebb and flow, but do you think we're making any progress here over the last 20 years?
Well, when we started, there was no legislation on the Hill for statehood. We were fighting for a concept, an idea that had no legislative support whatsoever. We were fighting for statehood. Now there is a bill in the House and the Senate, and we have the largest number of co-sponsors in the House, 140, I believe. And the Senate, we have 20, just gained 20 co-sponsors. But when Stand Up started, Stand Up was out there in the streets. We were founded by new and experienced activists. One that we honored was Mark Thompson, and he headed our Civil Disobedience Direct Action department, or you want to call it department. We used to go out every Tuesday. No, we met every Tuesday in the National Council of Negro Women, headed by the iconic Dorothy Height, and we went out every Thursday and were arrested. Civil disobedience, arrest, direct action was a key part of our movement at that time. It seems as if the movement now is more towards more sophistication, more lobbying going on the Hill and educating the members of Congress. But back at the time when we were founded by people who knew the value of going out in the street and getting attention for the issue, going out and protesting, going out and challenging the Congress and defying the Congress. And that's one of the biggest changes I can say there is now. And another thing that I really have to say is Stand Up was always for full statehood. One of our founders was A.C. Byrd, Jr. He was an atomic veteran. He served in the military starting with, I think he said he was on the boat with John F. Kennedy on one of the PT boats. But he suffered from the result of exposure to atomic material. And his goal was always to make D.C. a state. And that was always Stand Up's goal. Our mission was statehood, complete and full statehood. Whereas since that time, up until, I say, the last 2 or 3 years, the movement has gone through various changes, various missions, various messages that it's put out to the country. But we were always for full statehood.
Do you have your doubters now? Do you think that's why the message might be getting diluted or softened?
No, I'm saying now the message is clear. Everyone who's involved, I think that's why we had, I was stunned, I'm going to be honest with you. We had the mayor come. We had the chair of the council come to our anniversary. We had several council members. Of course, we had full support from the D.C. statehood delegation. But I was quite, I have to say, I was surprised. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that all the elected officials are on board, at least, I won't say superficially, but at least publicly, everyone is on board with the message and the mission of D.C. statehood. So that's a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think that what happened over the years is that, you know, people tried different approaches because they didn't think they could attain statehood, and that did dilute the message. And I think Anish is right. I think we're back on the right track. You know, when you run a political campaign, I've been involved in a lot of PR campaigns, political campaigns, and there is a message, and everybody involved is supposed to stay on message. When you have a campaign, even surrogates, you know, they're supposed to follow the message. And I think we had a long, when I first started in this, it was very, that message was very ambiguous at times.
It was,
And Anish Jenkins and her people stood there and said, statehood, 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 when everybody else was saying, oh, let's get a vote for Eleanor, or oh, let's have autonomy over our budget. All things which are important, but they never wavered. Statehood, statehood, statehood. And what I used to say is it was like, it would be like asking Rosa Parks settling for sitting in the middle of the bus. You know, there should be no conditional equality, right? You're either equal or you're not.
And, right, and, that's right.
Yeah, and Anish has always beat that drum. Well, what do you think we need to do now, Anish? Moving forward? You know, I've been out there beating the drum saying we need to put some money into this. We need to, you know, activate the country and support the people that work on this. But what do you think we need to do to get...
We go to the Black Caucus conference every year that's held here in D.C. And every year they have a huge town hall that starts off the conference. And John Lewis, the iconic John Lewis from the Students Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, is on the panel. And I always ask him, I'm like, Mr. Lewis, what can we do? You know, what can the people of D.C. do to activate, to inspire people? And his answer is always, to me, D.C. is too quiet. And I agree with him. We've got to get the word out to the country. Most people don't know our status. They come here. They believe we're either a state or that we have all the rights that we're supposed to have. We're the only capital in the whole world where the residents do not have the basic citizenship rights. So I agree with Representative Lewis that we have to make some noise. He calls it good trouble. you know. But we need to be out there sometimes getting arrested like we did when we had Mayor Gray, and our current mayor also got arrested. I think that type of thing is very important to grab the attention of the world, to grab the attention of the country, and to make people see that we care, that the citizens of the District of Columbia care. There's all types of other things we can use, which is social media, Twitter. We should have money for people who are doing Twitter, who are doing YouTube, who are getting the message out, you know, just getting the message out and telling people how it affects us. But I think direct action is still one of the best methods to call attention to the issue.
Yeah, and let me say that, first of all, Anise, how many times have you been arrested?
About nine, not that many.
Nine times, but no convictions, right? Nine arrests and no convictions.
No.
And I often say this would qualify her to be the mayor of the governor of New Jersey. Nine arrests, no convictions. But I was arrested and went to court as well with Anise the last time. I think the last time she was arrested. But that was the last time we did it, and that was what?
That's right.
Anise, like 5 years ago.
2011.
So 6 years ago.
Is
there a chain of command? Do you have a hierarchy so that you can get manner and consistently?
I couldn't.
You got cut off. Repeat that.
Is there a chain of command so that there's a hierarchy involved so that you are consistent with your messaging and you are getting it out with a consensus amongst your constituents?
Well, we have several organizations that work on D.C. statehood. Our organization, well, I'm the executive director of our organization, and we also have the D.C. statehood delegation, which is Senator Brown, Senator Strauss, and we have Representative Garcia. And we have a department in the D.C. government, which is called, what is that called, the Office of Regional and Government Affairs.
Affairs, the
referendum. Yeah, so we have various, I guess you could call it, various aspects of the movement, which kind of do their own individual thing. So I would say there's no central command. There's no central command.
Right, and I think that's a problem, Maria. And let me tell you, one of the problems with the Office of Regional and Government Affairs, which Anise just mentioned, they're the most well-funded by far. And I don't know what they're doing. That's one thing. But another thing is, it's hard for them, I think, to push for statehood because they're also always asking the federal government for assistance. So with one hand, they're up there trying to get assistance for the people of Washington, D.C., like all jurisdictions do with the federal government. And then on the other hand, they're demanding our equal rights. And it's like they're playing good cop, bad cop with Congress, which is okay, except they're using the same cop. You can't use the same cop for good cop, bad cop. We have to have a bad cop, you know? and I think that's the elected delegation. Me and Senator Strauss and Representative Garcia and groups like Anise, we're the ones that should be up there beating these guys up and demanding our equal rights, not the people who turn around and ask them for favors.
I agree. And one thing, the legislation that created the control board, unless I'm wrong, if we have, I think it's 3 or 4 years of unbalanced budget, it can come back.
Right.
You know, it went out, but they can reimpose that whole disastrous system that tried to run the school system and tried and almost destroyed it. I mean, it was ridiculous that we had people trying to run the Capitol and they couldn't even balance their own budget. You know, the Congress is the last thing that should be controlling a local government. But I agree with Senator Brown. They need to be independent. I think we really need to have independent entity that's doing one thing, that is providing funds. We need the people of D.C. I saw Dr. Height burn her mortgage of her building, which is the one. I think it's the only black-owned large office building downtown on Pennsylvania Avenue. She got money through people donating funds. She had little collection boxes in the libraries, and people would put their money in. She got Oprah. She got Bill Cosby. She got these big billionaires to give funds. But I think that's one of the things that we need to do, is do all types of ways to raise money. This movement needs money. It's ridiculous that we're divvying up, I think it's 200,000 among, what is it, six or maybe eight or nine different organizations. Yeah. And I don't, and but we're required to do national outreach.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. And just to put it in perspective, one of the things that we say all the time, we spent $200 million on a streetcar line that goes a few blocks. It goes about 2 miles on 8th Street. And you know, if we can spend that kind of money on a small transportation system, certainly we can spend more money on trying to get our equal rights. And so I think that the government really needs to kick in more. But I think you're right. We also need to try all sorts of fundraising things. And I think that the thing that you did last week with your anniversary was a good start for that.
It's a start. I think we need to continue. But we can't do it every 10 years. That's not going to work.
Right.
But it is a start. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, you're a 501c3.
Yes.
That's a...
Yes.
An opportunity for people to donate to you and get benefits.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Not just from what you do, but for them too, with their philanthropy.
Yes. That's right. Well, we are 501c3.
And now that Marie has brought that up, why don't you tell people how they can donate, Anise, if they're listening? Do you have a website, right?
Yes, we do. We have a website that has a prominent donate button on it. All you have to do is click it. Our website is www.freedc.org, and you can. This is a great time to donate. This is the end of the year where you can just write it off on your taxes. It's a wonderful time to donate. And what our motto is: if it's not too late to donate.
All right.
Well, hey, Anise, have you looked into employers allowing their employees to have deductions from their paycheck?
There is a local, well, we are a member of the DC One Fund, which allows DC government employees to donate from their paychecks. And we're also a member of the federal, I forget what it's called, but it allows federal employees to deduct from their paycheck. And they have fairs around the city, and we do go to those, and we get quite a bit of support. You have to really, I know a lot of times we're in competition with other organizations. Now, this is about education. We have other organizations that are doing direct services, like maybe providing food for people or providing scholarships to youth. And then you have to help people understand how statehood is going to help their everyday life, just like an organization that might be providing direct services. I think
right.
That's one of the main things, is to explain to people how statehood will impact their everyday life. I think.
Can you give a couple examples of that?
Yes, I definitely can. At one point, D.C. was prevented from spending its own locally raised funds. This is tax money out of our pockets for needle exchange, which meant that we would be able to provide organizations to provide clean needles for people who were infected with HIV/AIDS, which was, and I think it still might be, at a rate much higher than around the country. But the Congress prevented us from spending our own local funds on it. Once we broke that barrier, and once we got that bill through without congressional opposition, and it still could come back again, but right now we can spend money on that and fund organizations. The AIDS rate has gone down precipitously, and that's a life or death issue. You're talking about life or death. That's one primary example that I was really shocked at, that Congress would think they could step in and tell us how to spend our own local money. Another thing is schools. We have the highest percentage of charter schools in the country. And this really is something that Congress has imposed on us, and that's public funds for private schools. And D.C. residents have been polled over and over again as to whether they want charter schools, that public money being spent on charter schools. We say no, but the Congress can impose such spending on us if they want to, and that's affecting education. So you have two instances of one thing where Congress is imposing something that hurts our health, and the other is where Congress is imposing something that affects our education. We really can't tax the 500,000 people who come to work every day and make money. They come across the 14th Street Bridge from Maryland. They come across the bridge from Virginia. They come from Delaware, wherever, and work in D.C. every day, but we can't tax them. They can take every bit of, I mean, if we were a state, we would be like New Jersey. If you live in New Jersey and you work in New York, you pay part of your tax money to New York. We can't do that because Congress has restricted us from doing that.
And
those
it's
are great
estimated
examples. Thank you.
It's estimated by a local public interest group, D.C. Appleseed, that we lose $2 billion a year because of what Anise just said. We lose $2 billion a year by not being able to tax income at its source. And one other thing, which I think is particularly bizarre but is happening right now, is that we had a referendum. We legalized marijuana in the district, but Congress won't let us regulate it. You have recreational marijuana being allowed in the district, but there's no regulation of it because Congress, for some reason, has said you can't regulate it. So, you know, that's another thing that affects us, the lives of all the people in the District of Columbia. And, you know, we could go on and on about this all night between things that Anise has said that really injure us and things that are just insulting, like they tried to take away our World War One memorial a couple of years ago and nationalize it. You know, it goes from being injurious to being just insulting sometimes. It's just amazing. We have one statue in the nation's capital as opposed to every state that has two. And we had to, how long did Eleanor Holmes Norton had to fight to get that one state statue of Frederick Douglass in the capital? And now we're about to, what is it, his 200th birthday coming up? There's some celebration.
Coming up. Mm-hmm.
And we're now fighting with Maryland over who owns him. You know, Maryland claims him as a favorite son, and so does the District of Columbia. But there's just so many examples of that. What about Puerto Rico, Anise? What do you think about the new push from Puerto Rico? Puerto Rico has put together a congressional delegation, which includes a retired general, several members that were leaders of the Puerto Rican Senate, a baseball Hall of Famer. This is serious stuff. What do you think about their push? Can we get involved in that? Would that help us or hurt us, you think?
I don't think it would hurt us. I think it could help in some sense because I know when we went on the Hill and we went to some of the Republican offices on the Senate side, several of the offices said that they were against statehood for D.C., but they were for statehood for Puerto Rico because they assume that Puerto Rico, now I don't know if it's true, but they assume that Puerto Rico will sway towards the Republican side. And I think maybe we can go in like in the past that there are two states, one Republican, one Democrat, or it used to be one slave and one free state that used to go in together for statehood. So that's possible, although it seems as if some people who have a lot of power in the sea don't even treat Puerto Ricans as Americans, but maybe they'll get over that.
Well, you know, yeah, that's Niece was referring to the Missouri plan. But let me tell you, let me just mention what Jennifer Gonzalez Colon, who is the representative for Puerto Rico, said in the Washington Post today. She said, "That's the reason we need to become a state. We are Americans. We are nearly 4 million American citizens. And that's the reason we need to solve this situation." She was talking about the aftermath of the hurricane in Puerto Rico. "So we can be treated differently as a state. We voted this June, 97% of the people voted for statehood. I filed a bill for letting Puerto Rico become a state in January of this year, and I will definitely be filing another bill." So it sounds like the Puerto Ricans are really serious about this at this point. And we need to get serious about it too, I think.
Yeah. Maybe there's some way that we can work together, get the D.C. statehood delegation and strategize together and see what we can do, because we really need the partnership would work. I think it would work very well, because D.C. being, that was one of the four twos, D.C. being two Democrat. So if we can get the Democrat Party and the Republican, as they consider Puerto Rico to be more Republican, to come in together, and it won't throw the balance off. But I don't think it should be about partisan part of politics at all. It should be about what are our rights as American citizens, and how dare you exclude us from having those rights when we do everything that we're supposed to do. We serve in the military. We do things that we pay our taxes. We do everything that's required of a citizen. But we're not treated as citizens. And Puerto Rico is still suffering from the same thing. It's hypocrisy. It's absolute hypocrisy.
We have Taboo on line three.
Oh, okay. Well, come on. Taboo, how are you? Hi. We haven't heard from you in a while. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I've been going through a lot, Senator Brown. But listen, you mentioned one thing, and Anissa mentioned another that made me think about something. You were talking about the control board, you know, when they more or less, I think you mentioned martial law. And you made me think about during the Civil War, didn't President Lincoln more or less create martial law? What was it, I guess, in 1861?
Yes, he did. It's one of the few instances, yes.
Mm-hmm. When did they take us off of it, or when did they take us from under being under martial law?
I can't remember Taboo, but they did in fact. He did in fact impose martial law because of riots, and it was the only. It's one of the few instances, and I mean we were at war. We were on the brink of civil war at the time, so. I think that's the point that Anise and I were both making, is that it's such an extraordinary example of interference by the federal government. The Lincoln case, I think it was one other case, and I can't remember who it was that imposed it, but it's only been done a couple of times over 200 years here.
You know, it takes me to the question there that Anise asked about our status. If in 1861 they declared martial law, and I don't ever know them ever taking us from under it, then mean that would make our status, what do they call it, interregnum?
You know, I'm sorry.
They didn't just impose it on D.C. They didn't just impose martial law on D.C.
Right. Yeah.
But what they did... Now, I don't know if the rumor that goes around, been going around for how many years, they saying, you know, made D.C. a corporation. You know, I mean, is that fact or is that just a conspiracy?
No, I don't think it's a fact. I don't think, you know, I think that the legal status that we have is pretty well established through the Constitution. It's funny that's one thing that the chairman of the... of the council said it, and Anise's thing when he spoke was that somebody said that what they've done to us is constitutional, and he said it's not constitutional. But the truth of the matter is, it is constitutional. It's not right. You know, Anise is right. It's not right. It's un-American, It's undemocratic, but it's not unconstitutional. It, you know, to say that Congress has the right to, do all legislation in all cases mm-hmm. whatsoever, that's pretty finite, you know.
That's
pretty definite.
Right. That's
I'm wondering if
Paragraph 1, Section 8. Yeah, go ahead.
Does the statehood movement, Anise, do you see it's growing older with its demographics? Is it attracting the millennials, for example?
Yes,
or,
it
or
is.
Younger
it's attracting,
people?
Yes, it is attracting the younger people. A lot of the young people that are going on the Hill now are younger, and a lot of them are new to the city. I think it should be an intergenerational movement where we have people, you know, now I'm getting to be I guess I would be in the senior category. Yeah, I don't know. I might be in the senior category. But we have the history, and we have, I would say we have the fire, whereas the younger people are more into the social media, and they're into the sophisticated actions and the YouTube and all of that, where it can be spread both ways. But I think mm-hmm. it's very important that we have an intermixture of young and old. Just everybody should care. Everybody should care about
exactly.
whether they're being treated right.
Right.
Everybody should.
And so you have the wisdom and the experience, and they've got the fire in the belly maybe with their social media, and so that's how they could attract more of their
ilk. I think some of the older people have the fire in the belly, too, because we're sick of this.
Right.
You know,
Brother,
we are
ask
sick
another
of
question?
Being treated this way.
Sure, go
yes,
ahead, Toby.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's compare the constitutionality of not having statehood to another issue, slavery. Okay, slavery, you know, the condition of being under the control of something or someone else. We're under the control of Congress. That's why I say we're political slaves. All right, now let's look at slavery itself, or chattel slavery, or the peculiar institution, as it was called. It was illegal. People say it wasn't, but look how many years it existed. So I personally feel the status that we are in, it's unconstitutional, but that's just a personal thing. But I thank you all for your time. Have a good evening.
Oh, well, thank you for coming.
We've met you, Taboo.
Yeah, thanks,
right,
Taboo. And let me just say...
There's a difference between constitutionality and being illegal, I think. Those are two
right.
different things.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what Taboo said was exactly what the chairman was trying to say the other night, that maybe it's not unconstitutional, but it should be unconstitutional given the way our government's set up. You know, it really is offensive that the good citizens, you know, we have 32 people in the District of Columbia or had 32 people that have received the Congressional Medal of Honor. The guy that wrote the National Anthem was a D.C. soldier. The guy that wrote Taft's was a D.C. soldier. You know, we've been a part of America since America began. So this is not only whether it's illegal or not is one question, but it certainly is undemocratic and it's certainly offensive. And we're the only people in the world that do this, as Anise said. And you know, I believe, as Martin Luther King believed, that injustice everywhere injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So you're right, Anise. Everybody should be concerned.
And I know Jesse Jackson, who was our first statehood senator, said that he did not think D.C. would achieve statehood until it rose to the level of personal insult. And we have to, I think sometimes we're used to being mistreated. You know, it's like an abusive relationship. You know, you're in the situation and you don't realize you're being mistreated. But we have to get unused to it. We have to say, I want to be treated just like everyone else. You know, I think
that is the problem. Yeah, it's like it's wallpaper. You don't see it anymore. And you aren't offended by it because that's the way it's always been. And so you get complicit just through inaction.
That's absolutely right, Maria. And you know what? The people of D.C. who are many activists in D.C. If they tried to take the voting rights away from you, Maria, in California, we'd have more people in the streets than we do, right? We'd have more people out there complaining about taking the voting rights away from some other state than they do about complaining about our own status. So we really
That's
need to do that.
I think it boils down to education. And I'm wondering, because I referenced that earlier, with this influx maybe with what you did this week and the fundraising, do you have a way of maybe approaching it differently? Because if people really knew, I don't see how anyone would also not be offended. I don't think people
I
know.
Agree. They
yeah,
don't.
I agree.
That is the problem. Yeah. That really
and
is the problem.
And we don't put money
people
into this.
Yes.
You know, we need to do a commercial during the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Anisha.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I agree. We need to have as soon as you move to D.C., you need to be, just like people who are sworn in as citizens, you need to be sworn in as a non-citizen when you move to Washington, D.C. You need to be told specifically what rights you've given up once you left wherever you came from. You need to be told you're paying the highest federal taxes in the country, but you have no representation in the House and Senate. The Congress controls your judicial system. The Congress can overturn any law. The Congress controls your budget. You need to be told this as soon as you become a resident of the District of Columbia.
Absolutely. I think we should put up signs that the signs that welcome you to the District of Columbia, there should be a big yellow caution label that says, caution, residing in the District of Columbia may result in the loss of your basic civil rights.
Ah, I love that. That is great. Yeah. That's a great idea.
But
yeah,
for
you know,
the folks who are already there, in other words, I'm worried about your real estate values, because if people really knew what they were losing, they might not come there. But the people who are already there, they're the ones that need the education. They're the ones that should be up in arms and in the streets.
Yeah, that's right.
And making phone calls. You know, I mean, it's affecting them today, yesterday, tomorrow.
Yesterday.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, we have an advocate in the District of Columbia. His name is Johnny Barnes. He used to be the chief of staff for the first delegate to Congress in recent history. We had one years ago, but Walter Fauntleroy's chief of staff, and he talks often about the fact that they fought and fought and fought to get Martin Luther King's birthday made a national holiday, and they really weren't getting anywhere. And Stevie Wonder wrote the song that we all know, Happy Birthday Martin, I think it's called, and he got 50,000 people to show up for a concert on the West Lawn of the Capitol. And they passed the legislation to make King's birthday a national holiday shortly thereafter. And he often says, you give me 50,000 people on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and I'll give you statehood. And, you know, that would only be like one out of every eight people in the District of Columbia. If we could get 10% of the population to show up, we could get it done. I really think so. You're right, Maria. I think, you know, we have – this is a two – you know, there should be two fronts in this battle, one locally and one nationally.
Agreed.
And we need to get out in the streets. I think that I know at one time Walter Fauntleroy, I think it was Walter Fauntleroy and Jesse Jackson, had us doing the arms around the Capitol, and they were trying to get enough people to encircle the Capitol by holding hands. And I was there. I was there. We just barely did it. We had to really stretch, see if we could really hold hands around the Capitol. But people need to be out. They need to be protesting. I really believe in direct action. I really do. It's the best way to get in the news. It's the best way to spread your message. You know, all of the other sophisticated ways are very important. But that's what Martin Luther King did. We're getting ready to celebrate his birthday. And he showed us what direct action can do.
Well, and you know, when I ran my own company, I ran a communications company, and when we would start a PR campaign for somebody, we would look to what the biggest people in whatever industry or whatever area, what they were doing. We try to follow their example. And you're right about the civil rights movement. When you look, this is a civil rights issue. I think sometimes we forget that. It's a civil rights issue. And if you look at the civil rights movement of the 60s, you're right. That's exactly what Dr. King did. He got people together and it wasn't just a matter of PR. It was also a matter of resistance. So I think you're absolutely right. We need to get more direct action. But, you know, Anise and I are getting too old to get arrested all the time. So we need some other people
to show up. Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself, Senator.
Well, you know what? I've been arrested one time and I've been convicted one time. Maybe if I had been arrested 9 times and never been convicted, I would be more apt to do it. But yeah, I don't have the same
badge of honor.
Think
of it as a badge of honor. King has pictures of him with his numbers on his chest from being arrested. So we have to just honor those who sacrifice, who give more than most people do. We really have to follow in their footsteps. And this is a responsibility. We don't want to have to pass this on to the next generation. You know, right. That would really be ridiculous. I don't want to say I'm celebrating the 40th anniversary.
I was thinking the same
democracy.
Thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you create, too, the cycle of dependence or the helplessness. Because what's
right.
the point? And
right.
and then you do lose the fight because people don't care. There's apathy there at that point.
Right.
Yes,
and we have
that. We do. Yeah. Do you feel, people, Senator Brown, that we are going through a renewal of the movement with some of
the new
co-sponsors? And
I do. I think that we're reaching a point soon, I think, of critical mass where you're not going to be able to stop this, where in the past we ebbed and flowed in the movement, which, you know, in the 1980s there was a great resurgence and then it stopped. But I don't think it's going to stop now. I think that it's just going to keep going. And, you know, and I think there'll be a seminal moment that'll really explode things. I often say, wouldn't it be nice to be able to talk to Rosa Parks and say, did you have any idea when you didn't give up your seat on the bus what that was going to cause? And I don't think she did. I think that you know, she was an activist and that mm-hmm. that's what she did. And I think we'll be the same thing will happen to us. We'll get to a moment where we get national attention and then I think we'll be unstoppable. You know, because it's undemocratic. Nobody, even the, you know this, Anise, you lobby on Capitol Hill as well as I do. Nobody says we shouldn't have the same rights as every American citizen. They just make up excuses about why it can't happen. They say things like, you know, if they oppose us, they say things like, you need to amend the Constitution, which is ridiculous.
Which is
we don't
true.
Need to
That's
amend
right.
the Constitution.
That's right.
You know,
we don't have to. Simple bill, simple legislation, which is what we
right.
have up there. Just vote for it. You know, I'm very upset that we have, I graduated from Howard University. We have Kamala Harris, who's one of maybe 3 members of the Black Caucus who has not co-sponsored our bill. This is ridiculous.
Oh, I'm surprised at that.
Yeah, she's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it's absolutely
She's a good
ridiculous.
Old Californian.
Well, and you have 140 members of Congress, all Democrats, who have sponsored the bill, okay, including several from California. I mean, California may have more than any state. I don't know. But there are several from California, but very lukewarm response in the Senate. I mean, look, we got – how many Democratic senators are there? 46 or 48? I'm sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head, but we've only got 20 of them. We should have all of them. Every Democratic member of the Senate should be on this bill.
That's right. There's no excuse for it. I mean, even if you just look at it as a partisan issue, which we don't want people
right.
to do, but there's a reason for it. You want to have your strength in numbers. There's that critical mass that you're talking about. and they have to participate. They have to support us. I mean, how long has D.C. been, you know, basically voting Democratic? Maybe we should start withdrawing our support for them if they won't support us.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm going to read further from the comments that was made by the representative from Puerto Rico. She goes on to say, most of the people think Puerto Rico will become a Democratic state, but the reality is we're very conservative on social issues. Mm-hmm. And she, in fact, is a Republican. So, when we need to get some Republicans on board, and I think there's some out there that would align with us if we could reach them.
I really think it boils down to education and the one-on-one, which is where the money comes into play. Because that takes time and money to do that.
Yeah.
So, Senator Brown, what do you think it would take to get us to get that money as far as
from
the D.C.
government?
Well, I think
we need to stand up. We need to stand up to our own government, which, you know, I think it's great to go out and raise money. And I think the thing that you did last week is great. And I encourage people to go to your website and contribute to other organizations. But we have a government that spends $13.1 billion. The mayor of the District of Columbia just took 25 people to Paris for 5 days to try to get an event here in Washington that they didn't get. And if we can put some of that money into this effort, we can make a difference, because we need to put millions of dollars into this, not nickels
That's
and
right.
dimes.
That's right. Puerto Rico put $25 million years ago.
Right.
They had $25 million in.
Well, and what they did with the group that they've assembled, now they've attached sexy and sizzle to the message.
Right.
Because they've got those people that people already admire and look up to, so it's already given it cachet.
Right, and we need money, because my chances of getting into Major League Baseball Hall of Fame are very slim, very slim at this point, especially since I was absolutely the worst kid on my Little League team.
Anise, what sport could you and I play?
Let's see. I like badminton. I can do that.
Yeah. Well, you know that, one of our representatives, former representatives, realizing that Puerto Rico had their own Olympic team, put together an Olympic team for the District of Columbia. And what we did was we put together a curling team for the Winter Olympics.
Oh,
and Senator Strauss and I were on the curling team. And when the Post asked Representative Panetta, who put it together, why he chose curling, he said it was because he thought it was the only Olympic sport that middle-aged people could do without dying.
Mm.
So,
we didn't
get very far, but we really need to put some money on this. And on that note, we're running out of time here, but I want to thank Anise Jenkins for being on. Let's give you the last word.
Thank you for having me.
And your activism is really inspirational.
Well, I thank you for that, but I want statehood. I'll take the compliments, but I really want us to put an end to it. Let's move on to other issues. Let's get statehood and just free ourselves up to work on the judiciary, work on housing, work on education. You know, just we need to be free to really fight for those basic rights, too. We
Absolutely.
Need to make the 51st state the best state in the country.
Right. Well said. And America, while you're out there this week at Thanksgiving dinner and you go around the table and they say, what should we be thankful for? If you don't live in the District of Columbia, be thankful that you have two voting senators and voting representatives. Mm. Share the wealth. Bring D.C.
Right.
Make us equal citizens. We've paid our dues.
That's right. Free statehood now.
Yes.
And that's a great way, too, to thank everyone for all that they do to help make this world a better place.
That's right.
And I thank you, Senator Brown and Maria, for spreading the word and continuing to be out there and educating. That's very important.
Well,
thank you,
Anise.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving. And we're going to leave you tonight with a song. And this goes out to my friend and great social activist, Anise Jenkins, Nina Simone. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. Happy Thanksgiving, America. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote.